My name is Cliff Walker, and I'm an alcoholic. I've never seen such an enthusiastic bunch of people. I know Dorothy and I, one of the reasons we like to come up here is because of your friendliness and because of your enthusiasm. I don't know of another area that has, of course, we're enthusiastic back in Los Angeles, but we're, you know, on a lower key. So it's quite wonderful. This has been one of the greatest conferences I've ever been to. And of course, the highlight of this has been having Lois here. She's a wonderful doll, I think. I can't describe her either. We were fortunate enough to spend a little time with her this time, and we just loved it, every minute of it. I also want to comment on Model T's talk last night. You know, I've always been an introvert, and I always have taken myself too seriously. And even my first years in AA, I always took everything awfully seriously. And then when we got these people like Jack B, and I know it, we had a Christmas party in 41, and we had Red Skelton come to perform for us. And he was wonderful. He spent an hour and a half making all these pratt balls, you know, and the Whistler Gin thing. And I learned something very important, that I should never take myself too seriously. And I have come to believe that a good belly laugh is as spiritual as the Lord's Prayer, because it's done so much for me. And I also want to congratulate all the people that put this together. I know the details are endless to put on one of these conferences. I've been fortunate to be on three international conference committees, and I know that you have a whole book of details to make these things go. And they've done a remarkable job here. And I'd also like to pay my respects to the Al-Anon, and, of course, Lois. You know, the Al-Anons they suffer the consequences of alcoholism, as we know. And they are also, I think, very, very much aware of their areas of responsibility. Their areas of responsibility are four or five times ours, because the people who suffer the consequences of alcoholism are run into the 100 millions, and certainly they're doing their job. But I might say also that being people and normal sick people, they have had their growing pains, as you heard from Lois yesterday. But she didn't tell something that happened, and I think it was she was too afraid to hurt feelings, I guess. But you know, the biggest fight we ever had at the General Service Conference was over Al-Anon. 1952, the conferees who had gone back to this General Service Conference had a letter in their portfolios from Lois. And Lois then, at that time, said that Bill had asked her to structure the family group. At that time, I don't think they yet had their name. Lois said that in the beginning they had 87 different names. Many of those were unmentionable, I might say. And also, in the letter, the trigger sentence was put to the family group relationship B with Alcoholics Anonymous. So when this came up on the floor on Saturday afternoon, all hell broke loose. And we started this tremendous fight. And you know that some of the states were going to secede from AA. And a lot of us wished they would. And the fight went all after Saturday afternoon, and it got bloodier and bloodier. So we called a special meeting for Sunday morning, and the fight started again, and it got worse and worse. About 1 o'clock in the afternoon, one of the conferees got up, and he said, "I just got a message from our wives who are meeting with Lois out in Stepping Stone. And they have this message is, the only thing they want out of us drunks is to be damn well left alone." I think sometimes they're wiser than we are. But it was truly quite an experience. And I wish you'd have told that yesterday, Lois. But I know you didn't want to make us look bad. You know, I'm sure everyone here are aware of the fact that this is the 40th birthday of our fellowship. And I know many of you were in Denver and saw this flag ceremony, which just broke me up, and I think everybody else. But you know, in AA, it seems to me we have thrived because we've been willing to do everything different than normal people, and have thrived on it. And in our like birthdays or anniversaries, for the normies, is a period of self-congratulation for something that happened. In AA, for us, it's more of a commemorative, where we stop for a moment and look back and see how we got here, and then be grateful. And this grateful, of course, has to always go forward after this. And today, I would like to tell you a little about the history of our fellowship. You know, in our 40 years, we've had, starting with two drunks in 1935, AA has now spanned the world. In fact, we have groups in even behind some of the bamboo curtains. Our program has been translated into many, many languages. The sun never sets on an AA group someplace on this planet. Through all these years, too, we've had probably the best press that any society has ever had due to our traditions and our anonymity. People still laud our program and our fellowship. A bill in writing in AA Comes of Age said, "How in the world did AA ever get where it is today?" And finally, he said he feels that the single crucial word was communication. That we had been given a life-saving communication amongst ourselves, with the world about us, and a God of our understanding. And he said also, from the very beginning, our communications have always been different. They've been unique and sometimes unusual. And he says, why? Because, he said, of our kinship in suffering. And because our common means of recovery, the 12 steps, are only effective for ourselves when we're constantly carrying the message to other alcoholics. He said, therefore, our channels of contact have always been charged with what he called the language of the heart, the language of love. And love is our magic, isn't it? And the kind of love that we have used in AA is the kind that entails responsibility. Love without responsibility is like faith without works. It's very, very dead. To me, the most important single event that ever happened in the early days was when our founders learned to communicate. I'd like to turn back to the history to 1934. Bill at that time was in the hospital. Bill had had a call from Ebby, who had joined the Oxford movement and had gotten sober. And Ebby was an old drinking pal of Bill's. And he implanted some ideas in Bill that Bill liked. And it was coming from another alcoholic, and he understood it. But also, Ebby had told him the crux of this whole thing was the God idea. And Bill, at that time, worshipped only the God of science. So he kept on drinking till he got in the hospital and was been told by Dr. Silkworth that, and he told Bill and Lois that if Bill continued to drink, he would be mad or dead within a year. That night, Bill got to thinking about this, and he finally hit his low bottom. And his time for open-mindedness came. So he finally said, if there is a God, please show yourself now. And then Bill had one of this bright light spiritual experience that the New Yorkers called his hot flash. But it was... But in this experience, he had a vision of one drunk talking to another that would eventually span the world, which it has. The next morning, he talked to Dr. Silkworth and told him, he says, well, Doctor, was I hallucinating? And Dr. Silkworth says, Bill, I don't think so. I don't know whatever you've got there, but it's better than what you had. Well, when Bill finally got out of the hospital, Bill, of course, was a stock salesman and a promoter. He figured, well, if he's got to sober up all the drunks in the world, he better get at it. So then, in the next few months, he called on 75 drunks. And Bill learned how not to communicate. Because he would tell him about that bright light experience. And he wanted all these drunks to have the same kind of experience he had, not knowing that God comes to us in many different ways. And he would tell them about their defects of character and all these things, and the drunks got mad, and so did Bill. So finally he went to lovely Lois, and he says, Lois, I'm a failure. And this wonderful gal says, well, no, you're not, Bill. You're still sober. So then he went to see Dr. Silkworth, and he told him what he had been doing. And Dr. Silkworth said, Bill, I think you got the cart before the horse. You've been going out and preaching to these guys. You've been telling them about this odd experience. If I know drunks, they won't buy that unless you make them see they have to. He said, Bill, you're in a wonderful position. Why don't you... You know, when I tell a drunk how sick he is, I tell him about the obsession and the guarantees they will always drink and about the physical thing that will drive them mad or dead if they do. They say, but doctor, you don't know. You've never had this problem. But Bill, you've had it. He says, why don't you let through your eyes and your experience show them how sick they are. Use medical terms if you want. And he said, if you can show them how really sick they are, I think they'll buy this stuff, even the God stuff. Very shortly after that, Bill went to Akron on a business failure. It wasn't meant that way. I'm sorry. Anyway, he was sitting in the hotel, feeling a little sorry for himself, I imagine. And he still had a little ego left in, I'm sure. Because at one end of the hotel lobby was a bar, and he could hear the tinkle of glass on the ice and the soft music. And all of a sudden, he knew he had to talk to another drunk. And on the other end of the lobby was a church directory. He went to that directory, and he made 17 phone calls. And finally, through Dr. Tonks, got a hold of Dr. Bob. And when he went to see Bob, he followed Silkworth's directions absolutely. He told him his story, and Dr. Bob got sober. But two things happened that day. Bill got Bob sober, but Bob kept Bill sober. Now, Bob didn't need any spiritual education. He had more of that than Bill. What he needed was what Bill called deflation in debt, and the understanding that only one drunk can give another. And what Bill needed was to be deflated himself and lose himself in helping others. That was the greatest insight, I think, that they ever had, Bob and Bill. Because they found out something quite important, that communications in depth only come from mutual need. They knew then they could never talk down to another drunk. They would have to tell their own needs as well as the one they're sponsoring. That was the background of our 12th step that has now spanned the world. Well, after Bob got sober, Bill and Bob started calling on drunks. And about 3 years later, they had, I think, around 50. And they knew that they had something. But they also realized that this word-of-mouth program they had was too slow. Hundreds of thousands of drunks were dying because they didn't know about them. So finally, with some fighting, they decided to write a book. And Bill said, you know, when we wrote the book, I wrote the book, it wasn't a bunch of saints who wrote it. He said, we fought like hell. You can see some of it in this. And finally, but what Bill was writing the book, he wondered, could the language of the heart be transmitted through the written word? We know that it had, because you know there's over 1 million of these books now have been printed in around the world. But finally, when he got the book ready to go to press, Bill, and you can tell he's a salesman, he and an Irish drunk sold shares in the big book to alcoholics for $25, a book that hadn't even been started. So when he went to the printer, he said, I want you to give me the thickest backs you got, the thickest paper. He says, I want a great big book, so that these drunks will think they got their money's worth. There it is. The big book. A lot of people think we're talking about the Bible. I guess we are from here, but that's the big book. Thank God he wrote it. And then, of course, after they had 5,000, I think, books printed, but they hadn't anybody to sell them to. There were only about 100 people then, so Oh, I wanted to tell you something else. If you don't believe in God, if you read Day Comes of Age, and you'll know somebody had their hand on our shoulder. But, you know, when Bill had the book ready to go to press, they didn't have a name. They had finally boiled it down to two choices. One, The Way Out. The other was Alcoholics Anonymous. And at last minute vote, they decided to call the big book The Way Out. But over in Washington, D.C., a guy named Fitz had a hunch, if you want to call it that. So he went to the Congressional Library to see if there'd been any other books called The Way Out. To his dismay, he found that there were 12 other books called The Way Out. So they changed the name to Alcoholics Anonymous. And Bill telling this story says, I still sometimes shudder to think we would have been the 13th way out. But here is this, the wonderful thing. We not only got the name for the big book, we got the name for our society, but we got the big tradition of them all. The tradition that has given this wonderful press and relationship with the world about us. And it's the tradition that makes the most egotistical, exhibitionistic people on God's green earth be modest before the public. I hope it never changes. Anyway. Sorry to say, there are people who think we should go public, but I'm sure we will never let them. Anyway, they had to get some publicity to sell some of the books. I want to take you now, though, to Southern California and tell you more about the language of the heart. It's a personal note. But in 1939, I was probably in the last stages of alcoholism. I wasn't so physically impaired, but I was hallucinating every time I drank. And I knew I was in trouble. I couldn't drink and I couldn't stop. But I had something going for me at that time that very few alcoholics had. I had my lovely wife, Dorothy, who somehow realized that I was a sick person, that I was in the grip of something that I couldn't control. And Dorothy, God love her, she made up her mind she was going to find a way out for me. And we tried everything. All the things are right in the chapter 3. We had a few ideas of our own. I did. I told her, Dorothy, I says, look, honey, why don't you let me bring my booze home and you drink with me? You know, when I'm at the bars, these guys pour whiskey down my throat. So she says, fine. Well, the only thing that happened is Dorothy's Irish and French, and she almost became an alcoholic and had to quit. Anyway, one day, Dorothy read an article in one of the Los Angeles papers written by Beatrice Fairfax. Now, Beatrice Fairfax was the Ann Landers of yesteryear, for you new people. But the article was about a new cure for drunkards, as I remember. And that turned me off right away. But it said it told about some people back in New York and in Akron who had a very unique way of staying sober by helping each other. And if you were interested, write her a letter. So Dorothy wrote a letter to Beatrice Fairfax and got a reply from King's Features. But she said in the letter, she said the only one she knew about might put her in touch with Alcoholics Anonymous was a Mr. Watson, at the St. James Episcopal Church. No address or anything. So Dorothy sat down and wrote a letter to Mr. Watson, addressed it, Mr. Watson, St. James Episcopal Church, New York, New York. And Mr. Watson got the letter. And Mr. Watson just happened to know that Ruth Hawk and Bill had started a office, which is now our World Services, on Vesey Street. And he took the letter to them. And Ruth Hawk sent us a letter and also a pamphlet. A very skinny one, I might say that. The only thing I remember about the pamphlet was that they said, if you aren't sure you're an alcoholic, we have two tests. One, stop drinking for a whole year and you're probably not an alcoholic. The other was to go into a bar, have two drinks, and walk out. If you could do that every night for a whole week, you're probably not an alcoholic. I said, well, Dorothy, I don't know that I'm an alcoholic. I better test this thing. And of course, I couldn't wait a whole damn year, I'll tell you. So I went over to my favorite bar, and I had a couple of beers. And then the thought struck me, well, that Tampa said a drink. Beer ain't no drink. A couple of Boilermakers. When I was coming off of this drunk, and I'm in a hell of a shape, I'll tell you. And Dorothy, I think, had taken the kids out because she didn't like to see me in that condition. Anyway, I'm sitting in my house and the doorbell rang. And for some reason, I answered it. Strictly out of character and be in that condition. Usually I go out the back door or hide under the bed. So I opened the door, and there I met the nicest guy I've ever met, my sponsor. He said, my name is Mort Joseph. I'm from Alcoholics Anonymous. May I come in? And I said, yes. And then he told me the most incredible story. He said, Cliff, you know, I was owned a stock brokerage in Denver. And as my drinking got worse, I always had an ace in the hole. If I came to a point where I couldn't handle it, I'd go back to managers and they would cure me. That point came, I went back to managers, they gave me all the tests, and then they told me, very frankly, they couldn't help me. Science did not have an answer. Well, he said, you know, I was so demoralized, I filled up the back end of my car with about five cases of gin and started for Los Angeles, where my brother lives. Said about 3 or 4 weeks later, I woke up in a Palm Springs hotel with the worst hangover I ever had, completely demoralized. And looking for a jug I'd hit the night before, I'd come across the book, and he showed me the Big Red. He said, Cliff, you know, I sat down and started reading this book. And I stayed in that hotel for 3 days and nights. I didn't leave. And when I was through, I knew that this was the answer. But also, I knew that if I wanted to keep it, I had to give it away. So I went back to Denver and got hold of New York by letter to find out where the nearest AA group was. And he told me about a gal out here in a non-alcoholic woman named Kayla Miller, who had started groups in Los Angeles in 1939. In fact, Kay had called me. But unfortunately, when she called, I was sober. I told her I didn't need it. I'd been sober for 2 weeks. Anyway, so he came over here, and when he got here and got settled, he went. see Kay. So Kay was packing to go to Hawaii. So I asked her where the Alcoholics Anonymous meetings were being held. She said, well, we're not having them anymore. And Mort says, why not? She says, well, everybody's drunk, which was pretty normal in those days. He said, well, don't you have some inquiries or letters or things? He says, I really need this work. And she pointed to a waste paper basket that she was going to throw under the incinerator. She said, well, there's a whole basket full of them, but they don't want to quit drinking. So he said, I'd like to have them. And in that letter, in that waste paper basket, was Dorothy's letter. My God. I didn't believe in God in those days. I called it, for coincidence. I was always lucky. Anyway, so Mort came by to see me. Then he said something. He said, Cliff, Kay has been meeting in different homes in her apartment and different times. I want to find a public place and have a meeting at the same day and the same hour, so that we will be accessible to drunks who might need us. Even some of Kay's babies might come in, back in, which they did. He said, would you, if I find a place, will you come to the meeting? And I said, yes. I didn't want to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, but I had to see this guy again. He had talked to me with the language of love, the language of the heart. He was well-dressed. He was a gentleman's gentleman. And he was the politest guy I'd ever met. How could he treat me as an equal? Me, a dirty. I was filthy outside and inside. But Mort treated me that I was a friend and gave me love. That's what I want. And I'll never forget. When Bill comes come out with the 11th tradition, we grow by attraction rather than promotion. How that hit me, because I've always felt, since Mort called on me, the first attraction is the person that makes the call. A lot of drunks say, sure, they don't want to come. But if you don't talk down to them and you give them this language of love, it's magic, really. Just, they may just go to the meeting to please you, I did to please Mort. Also, I think the next attraction is the meeting place and the meetings. Truly, I say this, some of the meetings we're having in Los Angeles tear me out. The kind of language they use. Four-letter words. That is very unattractive, I think. And the only way I think we can ever stop it is by disapprobation. Sure, we can't tell people, but if we can tell these people, we don't need these kind of words. Sure, our stories are not dignified, but they should be in good taste. And if this is stepping on somebody's toes here, I don't really care. Looks like it's almost unanimous. Anyway, Mort called me later and says, next Friday I found a place down on Skid Row, 7th and Main. And meet me down there up it was a Cecil Hotel up in the balcony lobby. I said, okay. So I go down there. Well, I don't think I went down around 8, and I think Mort came about 9 o'clock. He's out picking up all the drunks. And finally, when the meeting started, Mort got up and he says, I've never been to an AA meeting. He says, I don't know what the format is. And then he told about reading the big book in Palm Springs. And then he said this. He says, you know, I am convinced that the principles incorporated in this big book written by recovered alcoholics will bring sobriety to any alcoholic in the world who really wants to quit drinking. I don't know of a better way to read those. So he opened up the big red at page 70, and he read the preamble, the 12 steps, and the paragraph afterwards. He started something I think that I'm so delighted we weren't started by some master barber who knew all the answers and given us all this word-of-mouth program. He is saying, I know nothing about sobriety or Alcoholics Anonymous. He wants the real message that's in the big book. And that's become a tradition now in our in Los Angeles. But another thing, you know, Bill one time talked about the healing process of repetition. And also the advertisers know that repetition is the greatest form of emphasis in the world. And I know we hear this over and over again. We should think we're shutting it off. But, you know, after a year of the meetings, I had to go on night shift, and I found out that I could say the 12 steps and the whole bit for almost verbatim, and I hadn't consciously memorized them. Well, it would be good storytelling if I said that I sobered up and became a very angel very quickly. And that our group thrived and had no problems. Good. It's good telling storytelling, but it wasn't true. I had an awful lot of lessons to learn. In fact, you know, after about two or three meetings, Mort would read the 12 steps. One day, I says, about the third or fourth meeting, I says, Mort, why we read these damn steps every meeting? Well, he says, why shouldn't we? I says, well, you heard him, you heard him. Then I said, but Morris, they're not pertinent to my problem. He says, what is your problem? Well, I had a hell of a good answer. I said, well, my problem is only drinking. Dorothy tells me when I am sober, I'm a good husband, a good father, a good citizen. I don't use filthy language. But it's only when I get drunk she calls me a revolving bastard. So later I ask her why she called me a revolving one when I was drunk. She said, well, any angle I looked at you from, you were still a bastard. So I had a hard lesson to learn that you couldn't have cured me from my alcoholism by stopping my drinking, then you could cure a tubercular by stopping his coughing, could you? So his problem, the tubercular, is down deep inside, and so was mine. But I couldn't recognize it. But I might tell you new people, be careful who you take advice from in AA. We can give advice by the bucketful and take it by the thimbleful. But a guy come up to me afterwards, and he said, Cliff, and he hadn't been as many meetings as I had. He said, Cliff, you just take one step and practice it, and you'll stay sober. And I liked that. So I thought, well, maybe I better make sure I'll take two, the first and the last. So I stayed sober another couple of weeks. Then went on the binge that was the end of all binges, where it was the worst I'd ever had. And this time I'd hit bottom. And it was a time where I could see Cliff Walker as he was. I could see my drinking and all its sordidness. I could see that I was not only destroying myself, but my wife and two boys. And I hit low bottom. I almost committed suicide. And then I thought, well, my God, it's a coward's way out. I don't like that God stuff, but Maybe I can get well anyway. And then I made the decision that was the turning point of my life. See, I'd run out of choices, just alternatives. One way, oblivion, the other way, a chance. I decided to go back to Alcoholics Anonymous and do anything they asked me to do, whether I liked it or not. And I might say that all through the 1940, I practiced with the steps, hating every bit of it. But I was determined to do it. And I kept on, and I'd pray, and I'm feeling like a hypocrite. But I want to tell you something about our new budding group, the mother group, they called it now. A lot of people would think that 1940 was a very bad year. I thought so too then. But looking back in retrospect, I see that it was a wonderful year because we went through the learning process of trial and error. If there was a hard way to do something, we always found it first. And like other groups, we figure, well, we got to organize like other people. So we organized. We even incorporated Alcoholics Anonymous for all of California. We were going to give out charters. Nobody paid any attention to it. But we had to elect a president, a vice president, treasurer. We didn't have any money, but we thought we might. And we formed some membership rules and had the membership committee. Well, it didn't work out too well. The membership committee got fighting about who they'd let in, and they got drunk. The vice president, Mort couldn't come to the meeting. He was the president, and he asked somebody else to lead the meeting, so that made the vice president mad, and he got drunk. But we did also... You know, in 1940, it was awfully hard to get new members. And when we got one, we had to hang on to him. We'd do anything. So we had this goon squad. One of our members got drunk, the goon squad would go out and find him. He might be at a bar having a good time with a luscious blonde, but they'd pick him up, take him home, and sober him up. Some woman, I guess, called the goon squad, or Mort, and he sent out the goon squad out in West Los Angeles. And these guys, of course, like went out there like gangbusters. And they knocked on the front door. Nobody answered, but that didn't stop. And they walked around. They looked in the window, and there's a guy passed out on the bed. So they went around the back, jimmied the door, went in, picked the guy up, took him home, sobered him up, found out they had the wrong guy. He'd come there to paint the house. But finally, disaster struck. A couple of guys living in an apartment, and they called up Mort, send the goon squad, we're drinking. So he sent out a couple of guys. An hour later, he gets a call, Mort, there's four of us drinking. Well, you know, when it was all over, and this was 1940, we had 100 members listed, drunk or sober. When it ended, there was only a handful of us left. Because, you know what, our meetings become very negative. These guys, we'd had an auditorium as big as this, the way we were growing. And it became very negative. And these guys would get up and tell how they'd slipped. and everybody tell them how they what they did wrong. You can't do anything wrong if you do the steps. I found that out. Anyway, finally, it was just Mort and I and Andy and a couple of others, and we had a meeting. And we realized that there's one place in the world where alcoholism is a communicable disease, that is at an AA group. You can talk success or you can talk failure. You talk failure, that's what you get. If you talk success, that's what you get. But we then regrouped and we found a little place down at the Elks Club in the basement. And when I still was very inarticulate in those days. And you know what my first job was in AA? I was a bouncer. Mort says, you stand at the door. If anybody come in drinking, throw them out. Anybody start talking about drinking, throw them out. And I was stronger then. And if they were drunk, I could handle them usually. But when the Post article broke in 1941, that's all these guys heard about how Frank and Mort and I were staying sober and how we've applied these steps into our lives. And they never heard about a slip. If anybody had a slip, we wouldn't let them talk about it at the meeting. Tell your sponsor. Get well first. This is very, very communicative if you talk it. And in early 1940, what time am I supposed to talk? Anyway, I was going to tell you all through night, and this is for the Lady Luscious. Oh, Bill used to call them Drunken Dame. Anyway, all through 40 up through 1941, when the Post article come out, we couldn't get any of these Lady Luscious sober. My God, we tried. We'd send guys out to make a call. We'd lose them. In fact, we dubbed it the 13th step. And it was a bitch, I'll tell you. We used to call a woman the secret sickness. But when the Post article broke, we got Stipple. I'm sure a lot of you have heard Stipple. But you know, Lois, they did us a bad thing out here in Los Angeles with that Post article. Dorothy and I, you remember, had the phone. And in the Post article, it shows somebody, a drunk, being taken out of an ambulance into a hospital. And then they show some guys sitting around talking to them. Well, these people come up and want us to send the ambulance out for them. In fact, when Sybil called me, she says, I'm drunk and my friend's drunk. Send the ambulance for us. We want to go to the AA hospital. And I said, Sybil, we don't have those things. Well, then you come out. I said, I can't. I haven't got any gas. And she called me every word in the book and was going to have me fired. But when she got to the meeting, she finally sobered up and we gave her all the calls. And that's when the Lady Luscious really, we used to call them the difficult 10%, really. Some psychiatrist had said that the alcoholism population was 10% women. Of course, they didn't know about the secret sickness either. But I call them the fabulous 40% now. They're wonderful on us. It's great. I think I've been talking a long time. I forgot to look at the clock. Anyway, Dorothy and I agrees with me. You know, the thing that saved our lives was having that phone. You know who made AA what it was in Southern California? It was the Saturday Evening Post class. They were wonderful people. They come in and, you know, when they come to the meeting, and we'd ask them if they wanted to join AA, and did they like it? They said yes. Well, we'd give them a 12-step call. Prince of God from Pasadena, Eric Chisholm. He called me on the phone and wanted me to come out and take him to the hospital, and I told him we didn't have it. So I said, if you can get down to the Elks Club Friday night and you're sober, I'll let you in. And he came down. So after the meeting, I said, Harry, do you like us? Do you want to join? And, oh, yeah. I said, well, here's a 12-step call out in Covina. And he said, what do I do? Well, I just go get the guy and bring him in. So Harry, then, talking about it later, he says, I went out there in the hills and I finally found this place, and this guy's name is Dow Deshay. When I got into the house, Val says, well, what do you guys do down there? Harry says, damn if I know. He says, I've only been to one meeting, but let's go together and find out together. You know, neither one of them ever had another drink. And Harry, telling this story, he says, you know, once when I got Val, I was responsible for him. I didn't dare get drunk. But this same thing happened to me because I still hadn't any spiritual awakening, and I wanted one. These guys around me were having them all over the place. So one day, and I'm still practicing, you know, by rote, like an old maid would take Lydian Pinkham compound, hoping something would happen. Anyway, it was over a year. I'm sitting in my room and taking the 10th and 11th and praying and still feeling like a hypocrite. And all of a sudden, I realized that I'd made a change. I'd even had enough guts to get up and read the 12 steps at the meeting. And a lot of the spirit left. And Dorothy and I were getting along so well. And I'd made a change that I knew that I couldn't have made. And all of a sudden, I realized that something had entered my life. And I came to believe. Almost a year and a half. Well, you people, don't let the God idea keep you away. All you have to do to join us is have a desire to quit drinking and try to practice the program. God doesn't make bargains with us drunks if we try. You know, I'd like to close quoting Bill and Bob and somebody else. Bill, in today said that we, Alcoholics Anonymous, has been permitted to achieve, although in miniature, the world, one world of the philosophers. And he said, in our world, he said, we hotly differ about many things, but never think of division or conflict as a solution. He said, too, that we've forsaken the pursuit of power, prestige, and money. And as we have better improved on the language of the heart, we've been able to cross all the barriers of distance, of nationalities, of creeds. And I would add something from Satchmo, what he said about music is, I think, is true of us. Where AA is, segregation ain't, thank God. Now, Bill then said, but let us remember. And this is a remembering time, a commemoration year. Let us remember that our wonderful world of AA is God's gift. and not created by any talents or things that we might have. Let's always remember to keep our channels of contact open and wide and improve upon them. He said, never let us become exclusive of people in need. He said also that the traditions were the thing that would guarantee our future if we practice them. You know, our program was given to us in three legacies. It's a spiritual entity, I think. Recovery, unity, and service. Now, I wonder who could doubt that God made AA. This Dr. Sam Shoemaker, in 1955, talked at the spiritual meeting. And he said, you know, who could doubt that God made AA what it is today? God inspired it, made it grow, gave this intangible but unmistakable spirit that we find so great here today. Then he said, what the world needs now is a world of spiritual awakening. And he hoped that our fellowship was the forerunner of such a thing. Now that's kind of petty wine. But I wonder if he might be right. Because Dr. Tunk, in his eulogy to Bob, said that our stories have grabbed and our fellowship has a great lesson for the world. And in talking about Bob, and this would be about Bill. He said, you know, quite often God has used human weakness to demonstrate his healing power. And he told Paul, St. Paul, who was he? He was once the chief persecutor of Christians. He stood by and he watched young Stephen stoned to death and said not a word. But God caught up with him and turned him around, and he became St. Paul, one of the great spiritual men in the world. Then he told about a guy that I can identify. His name was Augustine in the 4th century in Carthage. And he was a drunk. He was a rioter. He was a lecherer. He broke his mother's heart by his chambering and his whatever that means. It's in the Bible, so it must be all right. But I think Augustine finally hit bottom, and God caught up with him and turned him around, and a man was reborn. And Augustine, the dissolute, became St. Augustine, another great spiritual leader. Now, isn't it possible that God is using us, the drunk, the people who of the darkness, who for the thousands and millions of years have gone into the darkness? Seems to me that he might be doing this through Bob and Bill. Dr. Tunk said that the lesson of Dr. Bob and Bill's life was simply this, that God can and does use human weakness to demonstrate his healing power. That no one ever need to say they where they are. No failure must be final. No matter how far we go down into the darkness, with God's help and our spiritual program, we can go off the chains of any kind of addiction and one day be free to be just what God meant us to be. Thank you.